This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3, and we're streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's just about noon, 35 degrees out at the airport, northwest winds of 7 miles per hour. Sunny with some clouds out there. Tonight we might see some snow move in, not till later, probably after 3 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 26 degrees overnight. Calm winds becoming winds out of the south of around 5 miles per hour this evening. Tomorrow a chance of snow, then a chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 39. We'll see south winds of around 5 miles per hour, and Sunday looks rainy, about 100% chance of rain, according to the National Weather Service, with a high near 40. Coming up, Alaska Senate Education Committee has introduced a bill to increase per-student state funding, and an update on Representative Peltola in Congress. That's after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. A Chinese surveillance balloon is drifting eastward in the stratosphere over the U.S. The Pentagon says it's expected to stay over the U.S. for several days, and it has already roiled relations. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was supposed to leave for China today. Instead, he delayed the trip and is still in Washington, where a short time ago he responded to China's claim that it's just a weather balloon that blew off course.
Once we detected the balloon, the U.S. government acted immediately to protect against the collection of sensitive information. We communicated with the PRC government directly.
Blinken told his Chinese counterpart that the balloon is a clear violation of U.S. sovereignty and international law. The National Weather Service in Kansas City, Missouri, says several people have spotted it there. The Pentagon says there is no risk now to people on the ground, and the balloon is maneuverable and has changed its course. Stocks ended the day down after a surprisingly strong employment report. The U.S. economy added 517,000 jobs in January. NPR's David Gura reports.
The labor market remains very strong, as Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said earlier this week, after the Fed raised interest rates again, this time by a quarter point. 517,000 jobs is almost three times as many as Wall Street expected, and the unemployment rate last month ticked down slightly to 3.4%, the lowest it's been since 1969. Wage growth is slowing. It was a volatile day of trading. Wall Street has been optimistic that because inflation is easing, the Fed might be willing to pause its interest rate hikes. But the latest jobs numbers may put pressure on the central bank to do more to slow down the economy to get inflation under control. David Gura, NPR News.
Extreme cold is stretching from the upper Midwest into the Northeast. School is out in Boston, where a cold emergency is in effect. In Albany, officials are asking people to avoid the outdoors. From member station WAMC, Ian Pickus reports.
Temperatures are forecast to drop as low as 15 below zero, and high winds will make it feel as cold as 50 below in some areas of upstate New York. New York State Commissioner of Homeland Security and Emergency Services Jackie Bray says if you don't have to go outside, don't.
It's about 10 minutes before you start to develop frostbite on any uncovered skin when you get to negative 30 and below. And obviously hypothermia is another serious concern of ours.
Bray says the state does not expect widespread power outages, but urges residents to be careful when using generators and electric heaters. Local warming centers are open before an expected thaw Sunday. For NPR News, I'm Ian Pickus in Albany.
Canada and the EU announced new sanctions against Russia today, while the U.S. says it's giving more than $2 billion in additional military assistance to Ukraine. This is NPR News.
And for KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. Alaska's Senate Education Committee has introduced a bill to increase per-student state funding by $1,000. That would bring the base student allocation, or BSA, to $6,960. It would be the highest one-year increase ever. Teachers, school administrators, and elected officials spoke in favor of more education funding at a Senate Education Committee meeting yesterday, or Wednesday, rather. Juno music teacher Mike Busey said increasing the BSA would help reduce out-migration from the state.
Underfunded schools are a major factor driving away young, skilled, and professional families. Families who would love to contribute to the growth of our state's economy, but are not willing to sacrifice their children in a subpar educational system.
Fairbanks teacher Thomas Kennedy said it would help reduce staff turnover.
The morale of the young teachers, a lot of them that are single wage earners just getting started, are so low that they're the lowest that I've seen in all my years of teaching.
Two speakers opposed a funding increase, saying changes to curriculum or expanded access to private schools would be better ways to improve student outcomes. But multiple teachers said inadequate funding hurts student performance by leading to bigger class sizes and high staff turnover rates. Jessica Paris, a former teacher in Juneau, said she had the strongest relationships with her smaller classes.
Each got more talking time, more performance time, more comfort with their peers, more chance to shine or get individual attention and instruction, and more feedback on their writing. And I also knew them better, and so was able to pick up when I had a freshman who was initiating marijuana use and another who was abusing alcohol.
Last session's Alaska Reads Act included a $30 increase starting in July of this year, but many district leaders say it's not enough to keep up with rising costs. The committee will hear additional public comment about the BSA next Wednesday. And just 1 month into the new Congress, Representative Mary Peltola has had enough of political bickering. Alaska's lone member of the U.S. House told reporters yesterday that the House has done little more than welcome new members and organize its committees. Peltola has pledged to carry on the legacy of her predecessor, Don Young. In many ways, she is following in his footsteps, but her approach when she's frustrated is entirely different. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Peltola says she's happy with her committee assignments, resources and transportation, Young's old stomping grounds. But so far, she says the House hasn't done much.
We're spending a lot of time on things like non-binding resolutions, voting against the horrors of socialism, and people like me wringing my hands on which way do I go on this. And this is a very big waste of my time, Alaskan constituents' time, time in the building, staff time.
This week, Peltola was at the House Resources Committee when a routine meeting became heated. The topic? Guns. Democratic Congressman Jared Huffman of California proposed to reinstate a rule barring members from bringing firearms to the committee room.
How many members feel like they would need to carry a weapon?
It's the gentleman's time.
How many members feel like they would need to carry a weapon into our committee hearings? Got
one? I feel I need one everywhere here.
That's Colorado Republican Lauren Boebert, who has made gun-toting a key part of her identity.
Oftentimes we are harassed in the hallways. We walk alone.
The gentleman hasn't yielded.
And just would those be loaded weapons, presumably?
Not an unloaded weapon.
Okay.
It got bizarre, with one member challenging another to name the, quote, homicidal maniacs on the committee. Eventually, the committee voted 25-14 not to impose a weapons ban. Peltola's vote? She didn't. She says she chose to leave the room when Boebert put up a big poster board of Huffman wearing a tinfoil hat.
I just thought, okay, this has devolved to a place where I have better uses of my time. And I recognize that those amendments were not going to pass. It turned into a very shrill conversation a number of times, very high-pitched emotionalism, and not problem-solving.
Peltola had another committee meeting to attend. She had constituents waiting to talk to her. Lawmakers often complain about proceedings that waste their time, but choosing to withdraw from the field rather than engage in rhetorical battle, this is a very different Congress member than the one Alaskans had before. because Don Young was a brawler, especially when frustrated. His arena was often the very same House Resources Committee. Consider this exchange Young had with a hearing witness over drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Well, okay, I know you went to Yuba College.
I'll call you anything I want to call you sitting in that chair.
Pardon?
You just be quiet.
Well, but
you
why?
Be quiet.
That was 2011. This is 2023, and Peltola says she sees no point in engaging with nonsense. Guns are a tricky area for her. She owns them, grew up with them, and says they're a core tool of Alaska subsistence lifestyles. Still, she supports things like secure storage laws, waiting periods, and universal background checks, which doesn't pass muster with the gun lobby. Peltola is not saying how she would have voted on a gun ban for the Resources Committee because she says she doesn't think it was a legitimate effort.
And it's a lot of grandstanding and posturing and quote-unquote playing to your base.
As for the vote on the House floor denouncing the horrors of socialism, it put Democrats like Peltola in a quandary. It was meant to embarrass the left. Some said it was poorly drafted. All forms of socialism? What about Social Security and Medicare? It's easy to denounce murderous, authoritarian socialism, but what about the center-left parties in ally countries like Canada and Norway? To Peltola, the resolution was just partisan messaging. And she can cite instances of grandstanding from Democrats, too. To an extent, her complaint is what you'd expect from a minority member. Nothing is getting done, just meaningless resolutions. To members of the majority, the House Republicans, the messages matter. Here's Texas Republican Jody Arrington on the House floor defending the resolution.
And if, like my colleagues say, that this is just theater, that decrying socialism, extolling the freedom and the virtues and value of freedom is theater, God give us more Shakespeare's. God bless America, and I yield.
Peltola was among 109 Democrats who voted for the Republican resolution. She says it was a no-win situation, but as she sees it, it wasn't worth fighting over. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
In another news note, Congresswoman Mary Peltola has chosen a former rival and a Republican for a key staff job, state director. Josh Reback is a military veteran and was a state senator from Anchorage when he filed to run for the U.S. House after Congressman Don Young died. Reback had the endorsement of Young's widow but finished 10th in the crowded special primary. Peltola said in an emailed announcement that Reback's skills will be useful to constituents who need help navigating the federal bureaucracy. She said Reback will be the point of contact for Alaskans who are seeking assistance with federal agencies or casework. The announcement quotes Reback saying that he and Peltola are of different parties, but the job is about helping Alaskans. And in other news, the Alaska Department of Public Safety has released a draft of its policy for state troopers to wear body-worn cameras, and it's seeking public input on the proposal. Public Safety spokesman Austin McDaniel says the department has been pushing for body cameras for troopers for several years. And in 2022, the state approved spending just over $3.5 million to get cameras on state and wildlife troopers, deputy fire marshals, and village public safety officers.
We view them as a very valuable tool in modern day policing. And it's been something that the public has brought up pretty regularly over the last several years.
The 7-page draft policy covers everything from when troopers should turn on the cameras to how and when the footage will be released. McDaniel says under regular circumstances, the public can ask for footage through a public records request once an investigation or court proceeding has concluded.
If we have something that's actively working its way through the Alaska court system or the federal court system, we as the Department of Public Safety really have a responsibility to protect a defendant's right to a fair trial.
But he says in incidents like an in-custody death or an officer-involved shooting, the policy allows for the department to release body camera footage to the public before an investigation wraps up.
We do plan to proactively release body-worn camera video footage, personal audio recordings, or dash cam video associated with these critical events once those primary criminal interviews have been completed with all the involved parties.
McDaniel says the Department of Law has reviewed the draft policy. The public can submit comments on the policy from February 8th through March 1st. After comments are taken into account, McDaniel says the state plans to begin a pilot program in the spring to outfit troopers with cameras. And Southeast Alaska has seen an uptick in fentanyl-laced pills. Fentanyl is a highly addictive opioid, 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine. In Petersburg and other Southeast communities, law enforcement has found fentanyl most often in counterfeit blue pills, which are designed to look like the prescription opioid OxyContin. KFSK's Rachel Cassandra has more.
So we're going to go over today how to use the Narcan spray.
That's public health nurse Erin Michael. She's at a resource fair in Petersburg.
And this is used for if you suspect somebody has overdosed from an opioid or a heroin.
She's training a resident on how to administer Narcan nasal spray. It can help reverse an opioid overdose temporarily.
Too much of an opioid affects the parts of the brain that control breathing, and it can slow or stop breathing. So you always, always want to call 911.
The Public Health Center has been giving away overdose kits for free and showing people how to use them. The kits have the nasal spray and strips that can test if a drug has fentanyl in it. Michael says, anecdotally, there are reports of increased fentanyl in Petersburg, which can lead to overdoses.
I have been hearing of increased fentanyl that I can't get into details because we're such a small community and for privacy reasons. So it's really, really important that people know that it is happening in our communities.
In January, there were two likely overdoses in Skagway. Two Sitkins were also charged with intent to distribute fentanyl pills. Craig Campbell is a lieutenant at the Juneau Police Department. He's also part of the statewide drug enforcement team. He says Juneau has seen a rise in fentanyl.
Fentanyl has become just more prevalent across the United States. You know, sometimes Alaska maybe takes a little bit longer to get things up here, but we're seeing more pills come in that we're catching.
Campbell says there have also been more overdoses.
We're seeing more people that are, it's a fatal overdose, or people that are overdosing and then their lives are being saved by maybe first responders or even other people nearby them that are using things like Narcan to save their lives.
He says pills with fentanyl can be any color, but most commonly in Southeast, the pills are blue. They're designed to look like oxycodone pills. They have the letter M on one side and the number 30 on the other. But Campbell says the pills are fake.
The oxycodone, OxyContin, used to be a widely abused drug in the United States. At some point over the past 6-8 years, it's much harder to obtain. So say drug dealers or drug cartels are now making counterfeit versions of this pill because that's the pill what people like.
He says illicit drug manufacturers use fentanyl because it's a cheap and easy way to create a potent pill.
Since it's a synthetic drug that's counterfeit, people can make it, and fentanyl itself is very low cost.
And he says even taking one of these pills could lead to an overdose.
Controlled substance like these drugs are not tested for quality and purity, so some drugs could have more or less. And it can take one pill, fentanyl, can be considered lethal for people. And I can't say it's not always lethal, but it can be.
Back at the resource fair, Michael wraps up her Narcan training.
And it could save a life, so yeah. We appreciate you getting it.
Michael gave 5 Narcan trainings at Petersburg's resource fair. She says she hopes people take steps to protect themselves, their friends, and their loved ones. In Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Earlier this month, Fairbanks's only natural gas supplier signed a 20-year contract with Hillcorp to begin sourcing gas from the North Slope. It's a historic deal, the first time North Slope gas will be commercialized for use elsewhere in the state, and in this case, in a region heavily dependent on expensive heating oil. But some Fairbanks residents and utility experts are concerned the deal could backfire. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports.
Interior Gas Utility is a relatively small business. It's a public corporation owned by the Fairbanks North Star Borough, with about 2,000 customers and a network of gas storage tanks and pipelines that crisscross Fairbanks and North Pole. For borough residents, locking down an affordable, stable source of heating fuel is a central issue.
The whole Fairbanks area is hurting,
hurting for, you know, some kind of reasonable energy costs so we can live and grow economically in every other way.
That's former IGU board member Patrice Lee. Natural gas is, generally speaking, cheaper than heating oil and cleaner than burning wood, coal, or diesel. But Lee and others have concerns about how this latest deal to source North Slope gas was made and how it affects borough residents. For years, IGU has purchased natural gas from Hillcorp operations in Cook Inlet. They process it at an IGU-owned liquefaction plant at Point McKenzie and truck the liquid gas north more than 300 miles up the park's highway to the interior. 2 weeks ago, IGU signed another contract with Hillcorp, this one to bring gas south from Hillcorp's Prudhoe Bay oil fields. Here's Lee again.
That's going to be their footprint for any and other all businesses up there that need gas. And that's all good and fine, but many of us feel that we could have found the amount of gas we need for less.
IGU spokesperson Elena Seddeth says the company started looking for new sources of natural gas last year after Hillcorp made an announcement warning utilities about uncertain gas supplies in Cook Inlet.
And we are already set to transport LNG from somewhere, and we are closer to the North Slope than any of the other utilities that source natural gas.
Eventually, IGU and Hillcorp came to an agreement to purchase North Slope gas under a plan that involves a Hillcorp-affiliated company called Harvest Midstream, building a liquefaction plant near Deadhorse. Then IGU plans to truck the gas 500 miles to Fairbanks down the Dalton Highway. Harvest and Hillcorp both say that they are pleased to supply North Slope gas to the interior, but neither would comment further for this story. Critics see several issues with this plan. One is IGU's selection of a Hillcorp-aligned company like Harvest to build the liquefaction plant instead of putting out a call for competitive construction bids.
No, I don't think it makes sense at all. Why would you have someone controlling the entire value chain from gas supply to liquefaction?
Marianne Pease is an energy consultant who helped IGU with sourcing and contracting a few years ago.
You know, if you want to throw out sole source contracts, that's fine. But you have to realize that you may not be getting the optimal benefit for the end user.
IGU General Manager Dan Britton says that while the utility has called out for bids for other projects, they went with Harvest this time because the company has worked on similar projects in the past.
Given their capacity and their ability to get the project constructed in a reasonable time frame, the fact that they have operate assets in the North Slope today.
IGU signed 20-year contracts with Hillcorp and Harvest that they say will offer stability to their customers and a comparable price to what they're paying now. But Pease says that's a long time to be locked in with the same suppliers.
What will happen if other options come online here in the near future where the price is more competitive? You know, what kind of carve-outs do they have if there's other options that materialize?
Pease says the deal is low risk, and that's something utilities tend to look for. But long term, she's not sure it's the best price IGU could have delivered for a region so in need of affordable heating fuel. IGU says plans are already underway to build the North Slope liquefaction plant. It's expected to be online by late 2024. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
To say the latest jobs report was a surprise would be an understatement. I'm Nova Safa with a Marketplace Minute. Employers hired 517,000 people in January. That's the most in 6 months and more than twice what analysts expected. The unemployment rate ticked down to 3.4%, the lowest since 1969. Wage increases, though, showed some moderation, which is what the Federal Reserve is looking for to help further curb inflation. Wages last month rose about 4.5% on an annual basis. That's less than December's gains. On a related note, the Institute for Supply Management says activity in the services industry had a strong rebound in January after contracting a month earlier. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
The Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/sustainability.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the February 3rd edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. I was unreasonably excited to hear the word snow in the forecast. Although I'm old enough to dislike shoveling snow, I'm young enough to still like playing in it. So I hope we aren't completely done with snow for the winter. I may be among the minority, but one can always dream, can't one? What we do know, if we believe old Punxsutawney Phil, is that there will be at least 6 more weeks of winter. Really, in Alaska, this is kind of a joke. Shadow or no shadow, marmot or groundhog, we are nearly certain to have 6 more weeks of winter after February 2nd. So let's just make the best of it and have some fun. Folks have been asking about the comet known as E3. Experts think we'll be able to see it for at least a couple more weeks, if not for a month. With the moon as bright as it is right now, it may be hard to see with the naked eye. Get to the darkest spot you can and take a look. As of now, it's high in the sky all night long. Face north, find the Big Dipper and Cassiopeia, and look up. Cassiopeia is that constellation that looks like a wonky W. The comet moves around quite a bit in a few nights' time, so you should check on its position before you head out to look for it. There are a ton of places online that will help you spot where it is in the night sky as time progresses. Good luck! Friday evening is the first art walk where you can admire the work of local artists at the brewery, the frame shop, Islander Bookshop, and Double Shovel Cidery from 5 to 7 p.m. There's even a shuttle bus. Find out all the details at kodiakarts.org. And don't forget, the St. Mary's Fish Fry is also on Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. Yum. That's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Well, it is Friday, February 3rd. The year is 2023, in case you forgot. Sunrise today was 9:07. Sunset today will be 5:39 p.m. That gives us an additional 4 minutes and 30 seconds of daylight for total daylight of 8 hours and 32 minutes. Record high today was 53 degrees back in 1957. Record low was -12 in 1971. Looking at our marine forecast, for Marmot Island to Sitkenak today, west winds of 15 knots, seas to 6 feet. Tonight, southwest winds of 15 knots with seas to 6 feet. And for the Shelikof, today, west winds of 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. Tonight, variable winds of 10 knots with seas to 3 feet. A reminder that the Kodiak City Council will hold a planning work session. That's tomorrow. The meeting will begin at 10 a.m. The meeting is open to the public, and it will be web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available online. That's at the City of Kodiak's website. For those who request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, please contact the clerk's office. That number is 486-8636.
¿Tiene curiosidad sobre el desarrollo de su hijo? El programa de aprendizaje infantil de Cana, Head Start the Rural Cap y el Distrito Escolar de Kodiak Island Borough están ofreciendo una evaluación basada en el juego, sin costo, para niños recién nacidos hasta los 5 años, el 4 de febrero, de 10 a.m. a 2 p.m. en la Escuela Primaria East. Puedes programar una cita llamando al 907-486-7574. Se prefieren citas, pero se aceptarán visitas sin previo aviso.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.